Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to this edition of Blog Business Success here on Blog Talk Radio. And I'm your host, Wayne Hurlbert. And tonight our guest is Vicki Halsey. And she's Vice President of Applied Learning for the Ken Blanchard Companies. And she's also the author of the inspirational and revolutionary book, Brilliance by Design, Creating Learning Experiences That Connect, Inspire, and Engage. And Vicki Halsey describes the importance and the value of learning to people's lives. Vicki shares how important it is for teachers and for coaches to focus on the how rather than the what of the course material. Content, regardless of quality, doesn't teach itself, and Vicki Halsey emphasizes the importance for teachers, coaches, and trainers to develop a learner-centered mindset. Vicki Halsey provides her six-step engage model that democratizes and revolutionizes the teaching, coaching, and training process that brings out the brilliance in everyone. Vicki Halsey is a spirited, inspirational speaker, an author, and trainer who energizes audiences worldwide by engaging their hearts as well as their minds. With the same skill and finesse that made her a national champion platform diver, Vicki dives in quickly and deeply with her clients to identify and address their needs, their aspirations, and their visions. Her lively animated presentations feature entertaining and humorous anecdotes that allow people to relax and laugh while learning, a key factor in creating highly effective experiences. Welcome to our show, Vicki.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
And it's a pleasure talking with you as well. And what was the background to writing this book, Brilliance by Design?
Well, this was a heartfelt project that I, as I think about, you know, I run around and I've been working with Ken Blanchard for 15 years. And prior to that was a, you know, I helped design a teacher and teacher education, administrative credential program at a university. And I've always been, my passion is helping bring out the best in people through learning and having people understand that everyone's brilliant. And it's our job to figure out how to make them brilliant, how to set them up for success. And what I realized as I ran around working, I work a lot with leaders, and I was, you know, doing a lot of workshops. And what was funny, and I said that a little in the book, was sometimes I would walk by the classroom next to me, and it was like Invasion of the Body Snatchers, you know, with people just glazed over watching somebody up there going blah, 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 and these poor students. And I thought, wow, you know, human beings are energy. We need to fire them up and keep their physiology kind of alive so they can take on new information. And the more I work with other really, you know, very powerful authors, and they'd say to me, Vicki, I know what I know and I can write my stuff, but I just don't know how to teach it. So I felt like there was an opportunity for a book to really showcase how for about the last 30 years I've been designing experiences for learners, you know, on different classes, emotional intelligence, situational leadership, you know, really working to create a program where every single person in the room walks out feeling brilliant. Like, I can't believe how important what I just learned was. Or they hang up the phone or they log out of the virtual classroom. But the goal there was to really make them feel brilliant. And what I felt was a book would really help people do this. Like, if they could have a manual, something that would teach them how to teach. Because I think people don't realize. I mean, you know, let's say, Wayne, you hired 10 people. And they were all, you hire what kind of people, right? Superstars. You hire 10 superstars. And yet what happens over time is only a couple of them become superstars. And what I feel is the reason that happens is because what are the superstars doing that everybody else isn't doing? They're learning. They're trying to figure it out. They're watching everything. They're watching, you know, other people do what it is that they need to do. And they're just really learning. And I thought, what if we could set everyone up to have a mindful process of learning what they need to learn to do their job successfully. You know, just like someone does on their own. What if the other eight, you know, could really be set up for success and really be clear about what it is they need to learn and then taught how? I think somewhere along the line, People have confused telling with teaching. I told them what to do. Why aren't they doing it? So I think that was the motivation, is to set more people up for success. And I think part of my background with assistant principaling in schools is I have a very strong motivation, Wayne, for people to really treat their people really well and have people be successful in organizations so they go home and treat their kids well. I think that's also at the root of it. If people are successful, they're happier, and it contributes to better families.
We often hear about the importance of learning, and everybody seems to have a different definition of why learning is important. Why do you consider learning to be so valuable?
Well, I really think it's the foundation of individual and organizational success. You know, we think of innovation, we think of organizational change, helping achieve our, you know, how often do people set strategic imperatives? Well, I think they need a strategic learning plan to help everybody be successful at those strategic imperatives. And I believe learning is truly the foundation. You know, it's a deeply human connection of connecting to content in such a way that it transforms your life. One of the things I love to say, you know, a quote I love from James Flaherty when I went through New Ventures West coaching was, James said, people don't describe what they see. They see what they can describe. And it's through learning and language and practice, repetition that you learn something. And all of a sudden, because you've learned it so well, you see opportunities to put it into practice all the time. And if learning is done right, it really does bring out the brilliance that drives the kind of transformations and success that people are hoping they have an opportunity to have in their lives.
If learning is so important, why is so much teaching and training so ineffective at bringing out that brilliance? In the book, of course, you mentioned the wonderful movie Stand and Deliver, which is one of my favorites. I watch it every chance I get, where the teacher, Jamie Escalena, brings out the brilliance in his East L.A. impoverished students in mathematics. But why is that the exception and not the rule?
You know, that is a great question, Wayne, because I ask people, I mean, I just did a huge keynote, I mean, the whole room packed with people, and I said, so how many of you, put your hand if you can think of somebody who was just a phenomenal teacher in your life? You know, and you would think everybody, but really not everybody put their hand up. And then I said, okay, now think if you can think of two different people who are phenomenal teachers in your life. You know, and it went down to about 30% of the room. I go, what about three phenomenal teachers? And basically, there's like three or four people out of this huge room of people. But you're so right. It's like so often, it's like a miracle if you get someone that's a phenomenal teacher. And that was one of the big motivations for the book, is I just don't think people are taught how to teach. They're taught information, but they're not taught how to impart it, and then they're put in situations, and this is, you know, in universities, in colleges, in community colleges, managers are asked to teach all the time, people are promoted to training, you know, you're so good, let's put you in the training department, but people don't teach them how to teach. And I think one of the reasons that teaching, you know, and learning situations are often ineffective is people have a mindset. And I think they have a mindset that it's the teacher's job to be up in front of the room, sharing their expertise, you know, giving a lot of content, all, you know, as they design their session. I think they believe my job is to give them as much as I can possibly give them, tell them my stories, give them clear outcomes, you know, really. You know, it's all about me, the teacher, because I think people think that's what their role is. I add value by sharing my expertise. So unfortunately, because that's the mindset a lot of people have, is I have to get people, what do you hear, Wayne? You hear, we've got to get people through the content, right? I mean, those are the kind of things you hear. And pass the test, right? But what happens is there's too much information. It's not designed in a way that inspires learning it, doing it, you know, interacting with it. So I think sometimes it's just people's belief that they're doing what people are paying them to do.
And, of course, you turn that the entire concept of being teacher-centric upside down, and that the learner should be kept front and center all through the learning process. What do you mean by that?
Well, I love that you asked that, because I have this premise that I think 70% of the time we're thinking about what we're going to teach, and only about 30% of the time are we thinking, how are we going to teach it so learners really get it? And I think we need to flip that equation around. And, you know, if you're going to design something that you want people to know, or you want to, you know, you're launching a new initiative, you're changing your sales process, you're launching a new product, any of these things, instead of spending 70% of your time thinking, what are we going to tell people? What do we want people to know? When you flip it around to, okay, 30% of our time we're spending figuring out what we want people to know and do, et cetera. But then 70% of the time we're picturing those learners, picturing the people that are going to be in the room, and we're evaluating. And I think what's really important is we think about, you know, without people, no learning's going to happen. So it's, who are these people? What are they doing in this session? What are they hoping to have happen? What's going on in their life right now that we can hook what they're about to learn into their world and make it so it becomes so relevant to their success that they can't wait to really do, you know, really, and it's rigorous, Wayne, you know that, to learn something new, you know, to do a new behavior and change what you've always been doing. It's incredibly rigorous. And I think when you flip around the mindset, I want to do everything I can, everything possible to help these learners learn what it is, help know them, you know, that it's really know who they are, what they're expecting, but know that it's your, you know, it's the situations you set them up in, and realize that they are the focus of the interactions. They're who should be immediately taking on, you know, the role of, you know, speaking, acting, doing whatever it is that you want them to learn. So it's a learner-centric mindset. And you know how you hear about the customer experience? Well, I think we need to think about the learner experience, the employee experience, the people that, you know, what's their experience in this situation? Are they having the time of their lives?
Yes, you mentioned relevance. Of course, when I was going to school, all of the discussion was whether subject A, B, or C were quote-unquote relevant or not, and that, of course, included mathematics, sciences, particularly the dreaded for many students high school chemistry and literature. Those were the ones that tended to get really blasted. History had already been pushed aside, even though it was my university major. So they couldn't get rid of me that quickly. But relevance of the course material to people's lives is very important, because once they discover that it's actually got some relationship to what they do and think and how they live, then suddenly they have a lot more interest in it than they did before, when they looked at it as just a bunch of numbers or words on a page.
Absolutely, and that takes thinking about that very mindfully before people show up. You know, really thinking, what are they here for? What are their lives? How will this help them achieve the success that they're hoping they'll have?
Yes, in many corporate training programs, the trainers seem like they're trying to get through the entire process as quickly as possible and with as few objections as possible. And perhaps if they have some kind of test at the end, if everybody sort of slips through it without too much difficulty, they feel they've done their job. I've actually seen some corporate training programs that are like that.
Oh, you know it. How many times, I mean, you just think about the poor, I mean, think how many sales folks that are, you know, running around the country who there's a product launch, they walk in the room, there's a giant notebook, boom, here's everything you need to know about the competitor, about our product, about blah, 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 and they just, you know, really may show a video of something or other, but it is all with this poor learner, and then they essentially say, go sell. Thanks for being here. Well, that's like the antithesis of a learner-centric mindset, which is, you know, I mean, and then people are disappointed. How often do we hear, my people aren't doing what they're capable of doing? You know, well, they haven't been set up for success. If you're really clear about what you need people to do, then have them do that one thing again and again and again and again until they get it right. Have them observe optimal performance. One of the greatest books I've read in the last few years, one of them was called The Talent Code by Daniel Coyle. And what's neat about that is he said the three secrets to unleashing talent is ignition, deep practice, and coaching. And when you have a learner-centric mindset, ignition means it's like if you have a whole group of third grade students taking violin. You know, there might be 20 little kids taking their violin lessons. How come after 6 months, one little girl's just gone crazy? She's just, whoa, I mean, the difference between her and everyone else. Well, one of the things, maybe her family took her to the New York Philharmonic. She got to see a violin solo and went, oh, that's what I want to do. So ignition means as you think about the learners, what will fire them up as to why they should even focus? Why should they learn this? You know, get them excited about it. So then they start doing the rigorous work of actually learning and applying it.
Yes, that's so much different from what you often see where employees, for example, would be sent to a training program and you'll just hear this, I have to go through this training program. I know it's going to be boring. I know it's going to be useless. I don't even want to go. And then, of course, they get there, and it's a self-fulfilling prophecy because there's the instructor who's, why am I here? Why did they stick me with this job?
Exactly. And I mean, what's so funny about that is it's like everyone has good intentions. You know, it's just not mindful. It's not really ratcheting it up and realizing this is the foundation of the success of each one of the people in your organization. People aren't the organization's most important asset. People are the organization. Their ability to learn what they need to learn to do what they need to do either ramps them up to be a peak performer or just keeps them in that land of just kind of, I'm getting by. I'm doing my best versus being really successful.
And, of course, in many organizations, just getting by is often more rewarded anyway, and people discover that very quickly, that if they learn new skills, very often they find themselves loaded down with additional work with no extra pay. And so they learn very quickly that adding new skills often comes with a real penalty.
You're so right. Yep, and the goal there then, as you think about what we're talking about with brilliance by design, it's by design that people are really being incredibly clear about what people need to be able to do in their role to be hugely successful, and then listening to them about what their role is and making sure it's targeted so that that doesn't happen, because everyone, the waterline's rising for everyone. We're all moving forward. You think of some of the most incredible companies. I mean, Zappos, I mean, there is an amazing learning agenda for every single individual in that organization. You know, it's focus. It's not learning so that you'll get dumped on. It's learning so everyone feels stimulated, engaged, you know, and connected to the customer, to each other, to our organization.
Yes, that's definitely true. Learning should be, staff training should be all about helping everyone become more engaged and involved in the organization, and there will be real benefit arising for everyone, including themselves, because that's who they're going to be focused on first. And secondly, then, it will be also on everyone else in the organization and the customers. But sometimes that's not made very clear that there's a benefit to it. All they'll see and the lesson they'll come away with is that there's going to be a real cost here and perhaps even a penalty.
Mm. You know, what just comes to mind is the concept of action learning, as you think about the cost and this kind of thing. But what we often hear is, we want to achieve X, Y, and Z. Go, let's go achieve it. And then that's when I think people feel more dumped on. They feel like, oh, good grief, I have to figure all this out myself. I don't have any resources. I can't do that. But I would love to interject a step before that happens and think, here are our strategic objectives. What do we need to learn? What does everybody need to learn so we can knock these objectives out of the park, so we can be hugely successful at these objectives, so that everyone sort of rallies? You know, action learning happens when you have a problem or a situation. And instead of calling a meeting and saying, okay, we have this problem, this, and this is happening, what should we do? And everybody, you know, throws out all their ideas, you know, and you're basically, you know, pooling whatever you've got going there, and that's it. Instead of that, once again, a step gets interjected, which is, we have a problem. Okay, everyone, let's think about what do we need to get smart on so we can solve this problem? What do we need to get smart on? And see, each time, it takes some apathy and some overwhelmed feelings to being energized. People love to learn. You think about you, Wayne, and you do these interviews with people. It's so energizing to learn. So here you're saying, instead of saying, let's just solve the problem today, people run out. Who's willing to learn this? Who's willing to learn this? Who's willing to learn this? And people run out and start learning. Then they come back and share, oh, which, by the way, makes them the expert. I'm the expert on this, this, and this. Someone else is the expert on that. And we're sharing our, you know, our brilliance. And we're helping them. We make the decisions. And we start brainstorming after we've learned what we need to learn about what our situation is.
Well, I always keep saying on many Twitter chats that I'm involved in that we all learn from one another, and that everyone has something to contribute, and that we all can learn something new that we didn't know before. And one of the core features and themes of the book is that you describe the learning-centered mindset as not focusing on how smart learners are, but rather on how they are smart. What do you mean by that?
Oh, that's a great concept, because it's kind of interesting. I was laughing when I was in my presentation this last week with kind of subtly. It's like, you know, often you kind of think of people and you think, you know, are they smart? I mean, you just kind of have this sort of, you know, it's not attractive, but, you know, occasionally you're trying to figure out, is this person smart or not? And I tell people, we really need to flip that around. To, as you meet someone, you want to find out how they're smart. I have people do, when they come into my session, they have to say, my name is blank, and then they have to go, my brilliance is. And, for example, a lady in my class this week, she's like, my brilliance is persistence. Oh, isn't that a great brilliance? You know, so what's interesting about this is, and Howard Gardner's multiple intelligence theory really hit this one on the head, which is, you know, people aren't just linguistically and mathematically smart. They're interpersonally, intrapersonally, musically, kinesthetically. There's all sorts of ways for people to be smart. And our role, when we have a learning agenda, is to set the situation up with variety and different kinds of activities so that people can see, they can hear, they can talk things out, they can get up, sketch things out on a flip chart, they can be smart, because you've set the learning situation up for everyone to be smart in the way we all have kind of a natural preference, right? So let me ask you, Wayne, don't put you on the spot, but, you know, if you had to say to someone, you know what, if you were to do your best job of teaching me, it would be great for you to know that I like to learn. And finish that. How do you like to learn? What's some of the things that someone to teach you that they could do their such a great job of teaching you if they knew this about you? What could help you be smart?
Well, when I learn things, I like to have a multi-pronged approach. For example, I can learn visually by reading the material. I can often learn audio style by listening to the material. But at the same time, when it comes to something that's a physical activity, for example, learning to operate the computer, which I learned myself, completely self-taught, and for many other things, for example, mechanical things like repairs and so on, if I don't physically do it myself with my own hands, I can't learn it. People will say, well, see, I'll show you how it's done, and they'll sit there and they'll do it, and I don't learn anything from that, because as far as I'm concerned, they did it. I didn't have anything to do with the event, and they'll say, well, I showed you. Well, actually, you didn't show me anything. You just did it yourself.
See, and that's exactly what people need to realize who are trying to, I mean, I think everyone approaches this with a good heart. I want people to learn. But what they don't realize is you have to help people learn in the way they best learn. So by you, it's like, you know, getting to do whatever it is, if it's something that you have to program or something you have to do, let me do it. Don't just walk me through the steps or show me someone else doing it. And I think that's really at the root. It's not how smart people are. It's how are they smart? And really helping them be smart in the way they are smart. I always tell this little quick story about this. When I was assistant principal in a middle school, we started this life skills program. And because they decided that every single employee of the school would have a little group of kids for like 15, 20 minutes every morning. So they had a connection. These kids felt like there was a person they could always turn to, you know, and then they had this little curriculum. Well, they decided there were about 40 kids that were going to wreck it for everyone because there were no grades. So we'll give all those to Vicky. So they were my babies, right? So my goal, and these were some pretty troubled, you know, they came from all sorts of backgrounds, everything else, and it was a fairly wild and crazy adventure for me to have all of them together. Well, there was one kid that everyone just kept, they just kept kind of picking on him, and I kept trying to protect him. I basically kind of anchored him to me so nobody, you know, because he just was having a really hard time with all these, you know, pretty rambunctious kids, etc. So after a while, I realized he's really smart, you know, and so I thought, oh, what I'll do is, and I set up this buzzer game that they had to play in teams where you got to whack the buzzer with questions in kind of a Jeopardy sort of style. And I'll never forget, and I don't think this kid will ever forget either, the day where I'm like, what's the scientific name for aspirin? Boom, and he whacks it for his team, and he's like, acetylsalicylic acid. Well, you could have heard a pin drop in that room because it was like, whoop, you know, this kid that they didn't think knew anything, and, you know, check that out. And then maybe 5 minutes later it was, you know, what's DNA stand for? Boom, he whacks the thing, deoxyribonucleic acid. It was so amazing because all of a sudden they saw him in the way he was smart, as smart. And after, when that happens, Wayne, it's like so incredible because from that point on, you know, how did he feel? You know, he felt like, wow, I'm a rock star. How did other people feel? Wow, he's a rock star. Our role as we try to teach people is to have everyone feeling that way. We want people to be able to be smart. So if they're not, you know, if they're having a hard time doing the activity this way, suggest they do it a different way. Set it up so there's a variety in the learning activities. So I may not be the smartest here, but boy, this is my expertise. I even, you know, I have people do songs and stuff often in my classes and, you know, make up a song about the content. And I'll tell you, I was at the mall one time with my kids, you know, and probably 20 years after I had been teaching physical science, and this group of guys, they look like my age, and they walk up and they go, hey, it's Halsey. And they start singing, the family of alkali metals really live reactive lives. I was like, my kids are looking at me like, why are these people singing? 20 years later, these guys, because they did a song on the families of they had the family of alkali metals off the periodic chart, and they had to put all the different information, could still remember it because they had musical intelligence, and it helped them be smart. So that's what I mean by that. I love helping people be smart in the way they are.
Yes, it always brings me back to one of my favorite discussions is learning to read. I could learn to read with whole word. I could learn with phonics. I could learn if you dropped a book on my head and crashed it to the floor. That wasn't a problem. I could learn to read anyway. But I know many kids had problems reading. And of course, there's this whole religion growing up around phonics, that it's the most perfect thing ever imaginable. Well, I know lots of kids that couldn't, that weren't auditory learners, and so it hadn't helped them, and they would learn from whole word. But I also knew that some kids couldn't learn with either, but yet when they would set a bunch of blocks up with letters on it, they'd whip them around, and by putting their hands on it, and they would create words, and suddenly they could learn to read that way by actually making the words themselves physically.
And what a gift for them that someone figured that out and took the time to say, you know, there's this group of kids that don't seem to be learning this way. What can we do to get them kinesthetically learning? Love that.
Yes, it was in my substitute teaching days. I had a student who was having real difficulty. He literally could not add two and two, and they would they tried all kinds of standard math things, and I just simply put two things together here, two things together there, and that he recognized and saw value in, and I said, well, if you put the two together, what do you have? He says, four. And it was like he knew it. It was all there. He just couldn't put it together in that abstract way that mathematics is usually taught.
You know, and what's interesting, Wayne, is, I mean, I teach in a Master's of Science in Executive Leadership, an Executive MBA program, and just so you know, it's still the same with people thinking they're not smart. And all of a sudden, because it's set up in a way that they actually can learn in the way they best learn, all of a sudden they realize, I can do this. I can learn. And I'm telling you, sometimes my class, and we use this amazing survey that helps them with their learning styles, that's that free one you saw in the book, the free assessment, the building excellence profile, and all of a sudden they go, oh, I'll just tell you funny about David, one of the guys at graduation. He's like, you know, when people share what's most important learning, Dave's like, well, I learned from Dr. Halsey that I'm a verbal kinesthetic learner. He goes, just think where I'd be in my life if I wasn't told to sit down and shut up my whole life. You know, that's really important. What do we tell kids? Stop moving. You know, well, what are they thinking about the whole time? And that's, you know, that's almost half the population, kinesthetic learners. Stop moving. And then you're supposed to focus on what's being said. What's someone who's told to stop moving focusing on from the second they're told to stop moving? Not moving.
They stop learning as well.
Exactly.
Because they somehow anchor each of their movements to something that they've learned, and their hand motion teaches them one thing, their foot motion teaches them another. It's really intriguing. I once was discussing this with a professor of mine at history who once said that the mind can only absorb what the seat can stand.
That's genius.
And so that was his view on how long you should have anyone sitting there. And he said that the best place to write your exam is in the same room that you learned the material in, because while you're sitting there with your eyes glazed over staring at the clock, you'll look up at the clock and you'll remember something that was said during the class at that particular point subconsciously. I think he was right.
You know what that's called? It's called episodic memory. And absolutely, you remember, if you can think, where was I when I learned this? Boom, it releases the neurotransmitter. It releases in the brain the session that goes, oh, that's what it was, because it's all hooked together. You know, our brain is just sorting information into little pockets and areas. And so if we can go to that area, oh, that's what I learned. So that's great.
Yes, there's so many different ways that people learn, but very often I've found that people will try to teach other people to learn the way they learned themselves, and you'll hear someone say, well, old Joe learned, he just sat there, he watched how old Bob did it, and old Joe picked it up right away. Why can't you?
You know, and that's really important for us to realize. Because I'm very active, I'm very impulsive, I love to teach, and I have to realize that half my group is reflective. They like downtime. They like to be able to think. They want to write their answer before they share it with the group. So I have to say, all right, fill this out, and then we're going to share, and then we're going to go to a flip chart and create your own model or something like that. But we absolutely need to realize our own preference, you know, so that we don't overuse our preference and then create a space where only people with our own preference learn. So that's brilliant, Wayne.
Yes, there's different ways. People have different ways to learn. So I've always thought that when I was teaching back in my sales management days, different approaches to sales, I would offer how I did it and what was effective for me, but I knew that that wouldn't work for everyone, and I knew what was effective for some other people. So what I would do is I would try to incorporate audio learning, visual learning, and tactile learning where they actually did and touched. So that way I was covering several bases at the same time, and hopefully they would pick up the information from at least one of those sources, sometimes two, and some people would pick it up from all three at the same time.
Well, and you know, the neuroscience of that is that the greater variety, the more you're engaging different parts of your brain, so the deeper the connection will be to that new material. So each time you use a different sense, you're literally releasing more of a chemical called myelin, really cementing the neural connection to that information. So the greater the variety, the more the repetition. So you know, you definitely were onto something. I bet you had great success.
Well, I had when I took over the office, it was scheduled for closing. It was that bad. The vice president of the company asked me if I wanted to try to turn it around or at least keep it going for a little while. And we eventually became the most profitable company and office in the entire company. So it was working, and so I could at least take some pride in that.
Well, and remember what I said when I was saying why I'm writing this book, because now that's just a nice little example, but I want you to think about all those people whose lives were depending on the fact that they could learn what they needed to learn to be able to sell what they were going to sell and, you know, obviously sell something that's going to enrich people's lives, right? So think of the difference your ability to teach made on all those different lives, the people's children, that, you know, it's real. I think it's much more important than sometimes people realize.
Yes, there were all sorts of different learning skills in the group, too. Many of them were university graduates. One of my best employees had never even completed the lowest levels of high school because it hadn't worked very well for her there because they hadn't hit upon her best abilities for learning.
What a gift you gave her then.
Yeah, it was, and she turned out to be the best employee I ever had.
Oh, I love that.
And so, I think that there's lots of different ways that people learn, although the tendency for most people, though, and in fact the way I was usually taught for different things in different organizations or different aspects of life, even by members of family and different things like that, is that they would always try to teach the way that they learn. And for me, so depending on the material, if it was something abstract or academic, I can learn it in any way you could throw it out there. But if it is physical, I have to learn it by doing it.
You know what's interesting, too? So you know what, from the book, if you remember, there's the Brilliance Learning System, right?
Right.
Which is the intersection between people, teachers and learners, content, which is what they're going to learn, and design, how they're going to learn it. And listen to your example. You gave such a clear example of you knew your people. They came from all different walks of life. You knew how they best learn. I'm imagining that you had laser-like content. This is what you need to know to be able to sell what you need to sell. You need to be able to do X, Y, and Z. And then you really use the engaging design that enabled them to practice again and again and again, not give them the whole load, but practice that content in small, manageable chunks so they really got it to the place where they could deliver it, and then really close those sales.
Yes, I always like to combine many different techniques at the same time, because what I did was I remembered back to when I was in school, and while school was really easy for me, I was always easily the best student in the class, so I never had any difficulty with abstract learning. But unlike many top students, I was also observing what was happening with the ones who were having trouble. And unlike the you know, the great player who can never be a great coach,
yeah,
because it came so easily for them, I always was following to see what was happening with the others. And I saw that some just simply couldn't learn anything if you told them. But if you sometimes they could learn it by reading it, and so that worked for them. Sometimes they couldn't learn it by reading it, but if you told them, it helped. Sometimes neither of those approaches worked, and they would really do well with many of those things like mathematical block rods and letter systems and flashcards and things where you would put stuff together and all those sorts of things. So I knew that they were tactile learners. And so I thought, what if a person combined all of these ideas into one and see if you could create a multifaceted approach to teaching the material, that perhaps I would be able to cover all the bases for the people that had one, the other, or any combination of the three.
And I bet you languaged it contextually for them. So that if whatever their interest or what you knew about them, I bet you wove that into the examples. It's like when you do this, and they're like, oh, it's like when I do this, right? That's probably something else just subliminally that you did, because if you're connecting at that deeper level, you're making it real for them in a world they understand. It's like my son when he was in second grade was in, unfortunately, you know, you know the poor child had me for his mom, so, you know. Yeah, the poor kid. So he's learned every model in practice. But anyway, he's standing by a teacher, by his teacher, and then another teacher's complaining to his teacher that, you know, this Becky. Becky can't learn anything. She can't do anything. I don't know what I'm going to do with Becky. And Nicholas says to the teacher, this was reported to me from this teacher right later. She should have heard your son today. I'm like, what are you? He says to this teacher, you know, Becky's favorite thing in the world is roller skating. So maybe if you link her math to, you know, if someone's skating at this speed and then you let her read books about roller skating, maybe if you wove that into the practice, she would be more excited about what she's learning and thus do a better job. That's what I think you probably did subliminally, is link it to who they were and what they knew and, you know, brought it home that way also.
Yes, I always like to have examples. And
Even
when I was doing creative thinking brainstorming sessions, I always had my own little thing where I would say that we have to let everybody's imagination run free. I always said, let the child play and lock the judge away. So I'd draw a little picture of the judge and behind his bench and stick him in the garbage can and put a lid over it so that they knew that they weren't supposed to be judging what other people were saying.
And how important was that for what you probably had them doing, is things like role play, which is, you know, otherwise we don't use that word as much anymore, but it's now skill practice, right? Having them do the skill practice and show everybody what they know. You know, put that judge away. This is literally, you're in a learning situation. Say it the way you want to say it. Okay, now watch again. Look at the worksheet that we created or a checklist. You know, what did you remember to say? What do you need to say next time? Okay, do it again. Again, because what happens so often is people expect people to get it the first time they hear it. All right, good, you all saw that, great, go out and make it happen. But what you're saying is you gave them enough time to not only learn in the way they best learn, but learn with enough practice and diversity so they really got what it is they needed to get to do the job that they needed to do.
Yes, I've always believed in repetition and review and moving the material around so that it comes at you from a different direction and with a different analogy or example, so that if they didn't quite sort of halfway get the one example and analogy, they might really hone in and zero in on the other. Because if you hear it coming from four or five different directions and suddenly one of them will click, maybe more of them will click and they'll start putting them together, it makes a lot more sense when it's repeated in different forms and different formats, because I don't think the material will teach itself. A lot of people seem to think it would. You know, if we just design the perfect program, everything it will just fall into place. And you point out in the book that that's not going to work either.
Yeah, and once again, around that learner-centric mindset, very often, you know, we do all the creating of all this content. We make everything. And what I like to do is I create some, you know, maybe I'll do, you know, when we teach situational leadership, which says, you know, people go through four stages of development as they're learning. You know, they're excited, but they don't know what to do. Then they're not as excited, and they still don't know what to do. And then they move to the third stage where they kind of know what they're doing, but they're not. They're a little nervous. And then they move to the fourth stage, which is where they're good to go. So if we have I might make some case studies, little, you know, exercises where they have to just, you know, analyze the case study and say whether this person's a D1, 2, 3, or 4. But then the second I'm done with that activity, I flip it. Each table has to write a case study describing one of those development levels, and then we have them read it, and the whole group analyzes their case study. And do you see the flip there? All of a sudden, they make it relevant to themselves, their organization, their life, their situation, but they're doing the rigorous work that, think how hard it is to write a case study. That's rigorous work, really working the brain. I mean, I think people don't realize you have to work hard, but you can do it in a very supportive, caring environment.
Another concept that works really well, I think, is to have someone then take the material and try to teach it to someone else, and they'll then discover that they have to know the material even better so that they can teach it to someone else. In a way that they understand, and while they may not be able to teach it as well as they would like, and will have to devise new methods for teaching it, they'll really learn the material well to teach it.
Well, hope you found that in my book somewhere where I said the one that's doing the teaching is doing the learning. So the faster you get people up and teaching other people your content, so you teach them, give them a job aid, and then they turn to a partner and teach it, the faster they're going to get it because they're teaching. I even tell people, you know, people who are kind of hesitant but know information, get them teaching at your next meeting. Have them do something. Have them do the presentation. You know, bring people's, you know, ratchet up people's belief and confidence in their competence. And that's exactly what you said, by teaching it, you're giving them a chance to be successful and really know what they know. Think how hard. I mean, once again, it's energizing the neural circuits. So it's like, wow, that was a lot of work. I mean, you know, when I started this call, I said peak performers really do that rigorous work. You know, you get a new, you know, sales management system or something. The ones that want to use it, they're watching, you know, YouTube's on it. They're in there. They're clicking the help button. They're working really hard. Well, what if we simulated that as we design learning experiences? Make people work really hard in the same way. Show them this. Have them do that. You know, I think it's really important in getting, you know, and I love that idea. So thank you for bringing that up.
Yes, it helps to really, as you say in your Engage model, the first E is energizing and getting everyone excited about the material so that they can do the second one of navigating the content.
Exactly. So you want to energize learners before they even show up. So they're so excited. Wow, look at this. You have examples of, you know, previous participants. You may have, you know, testimonials from people. Send them a podcast on, you know, maybe I'm teaching this class. I'll now have a podcast. I can send people, listen to this and think, how well do you teach? How well do you help people learn? But do something before they even show up. And I mean, I just, you know, an example with my child again, which was kind of neat, was his first grade teacher. You know, every Friday they would come, he would come home, and my other son had this teacher also, and they would come home, and they would know what they were going to learn on Monday. So she'd say on Friday, on Monday we're starting a unit on chemistry. So all weekend I want you to ask everyone you meet, what's chemistry? You know, try and find stuff out. Well, Wayne, you can imagine the difference in her classroom on Monday versus all the other first grades who on Monday say, today we're going to start learning about chemistry. You could, with Nicholas's class, she did things, and I do this. I love this activity. It's called KWL. And the kids walk in, and by the K in the column, so like on a flip chart, you just divide it into thirds. K means, what do you know about this topic? So there are these little first graders frantically trying to, you know, share with each other, draw pictures, things like that, that can share a little bit about what they know. And then the aides in the classroom and things, and the parents would be writing, what do you want to know? And they'd be drawing in these small groups what they want to know about chemistry. And at the end of the unit, then they write what they learn. So it's very exciting to get people fired up, though, before they show up. And then the other part about energize is when you start your session. Start with a fabulous question that really gets people realizing we're not going to spend 15 minutes on housekeeping and other kind of blah, blah. We're going to dive in from the second we start with a very powerful question. You know, like you know, why is leadership so rigorous? Or does the world need leaders? And then what are you hoping for if you say yes? Or, you know, why is learning the foundation of success in organizations? I mean, get people thinking, who's your best boss? Who's your best coach? Whatever you're talking about, you know, what's the role of emotions in your life if you're teaching emotional intelligence? But a fired up question that energizes them and gets interactivity immediately saying, this is all about you. Then you navigate the content. So the engage model starts with energize, then navigate, which is your lectures, your experiences, your DVDs, your stories, your handouts, your card sorts, case studies, all the different role plays, mini teaches. But what you're doing there, Wayne, this is really important, is this is literally learning the content. It's so often people mistake learning with application and they apply too soon. And what that does is diffuse the neural network in terms of the connection to the material they need to remember. If you apply it before you really know it, when it comes to apply, you can't remember what it really was. So the navigating the content is really about, do you know what it is you need to know for what you're about to learn? You know, what you're learning, actually.
And, of course, the next sections of engage are generate meaning and apply to the real world for the G and the A. And I once encountered a young lady who was having real serious difficulty with grade 11 chemistry, one of the great high school equalizers, if there ever was one.
The new language.
And she had no, it was just like a foreign country. And I said, well, you know, you love to cook and bake. You do realize, of course, that chemistry is exactly what's happening when you're cooking and baking. And in fact, when you set up the experiment, you're simply following the recipe. You get all the materials together and put them together according to the recipe and look for the results, which they'll call by different terms, but that's exactly what you're doing. Oh, really? I never thought of it that way before.
Love that. I mean, what you're doing is helping people sell themselves on why I should continue learning this, right? I mean, generating meaning, people forget. You know, they think you're here, great, let's just get this done. It's like, no. If you're going to turn the switch in the brain that says, this is something that should go from short-term to long-term memory, there has to be a powerful reason. So these are all the questions about what's the value of this? What would be, why is this, you know, what would be the benefit of moving this to action? You just learned coaching skills, how to bring out the best in other people by listening to them, helping them solve their own problems. What would be in it for you to be a better coach? You know, my people could be more in charge of their own destiny. They would be more powerful. They'd have more job satisfaction. I'd retain more talent. Great. Let's continue now. You've got the generating meaning, then let's apply it. Now let's think of someone you'd like to coach, and let's work on a real situation. So that application stage is literally demonstrating the skills you're trying to teach in as close to a real situation as possible. Maybe even having a direct report, come into the class and have someone actually practice coaching. This is after, by the way, they've done all the out-of-context practice, which is when you're navigating the content, where you're teaching, reviewing, experience, review. That's different than this, which is applying to the real world, applying to your situation.
And it also enables a person to place some real-world examples and comparisons and all sorts of analogies into the conversation so that they're able to see, well, I looked at all of this material. How does it apply to anything that I do in my life or in my job? And with some real-world examples, then they can see that it really does make a difference if they know this material. In fact, if it's done correctly, it will show them how they can be more effective, a greater peak performer, and perhaps do their job without as much strain and stress as they'd had in the past.
You know, and what you're saying, that is the result of a teacher who says, I'm not going to let you go until you have done this enough times. When you use the word repetition earlier, it's let's do it again, again, again. It's like that miracle movie. Remember the movie with, you know, us and the hockey team and the coach? They stayed half the night practicing the same exact move again. Now do it again and again. And the reason for that is we really want to create a stronger neural connection to this new way of being than people have to the old way that's already embedded in their brain. Very important that they apply it enough so they get it.
Yes,
because
it works
then
really
you can
well.
Go to the G, right? You can gauge
right.
and celebrate and go, woo, look how much you learned. And I think that's a mistake that people skip that also. That you have to end everything, whether it's a 45-minute overview at a meeting, whether it's a one-day training, whether it's a virtual classroom training, do a quick activity to re-engage their brain again, send a little more energy to that connection, and say, look how much you've learned. Do a little mind map, a Jeopardy game, a quiz. You know, have them write their key learnings. You know, if you only have a minute, say, what was E? What was N? What was G? What was A? You know, if you're teaching the engage model. But something that gets them to realize how much they learned.
Yes, that would really be helpful. I liked your examples previously of creating a song. So when I saw
mm-hmm.
that engage, I kept thinking about singing the Mickey Mouse Club theme song.
Oh, I like that. Oh, I could do that. That's a great way. Oh,
E-N-G-A-G-E. Let's engage with you and me.
Oh, that's a great way. You'll remember it always now.
Yes, it'll be embedded in my brain. I always think in terms of music. For example, music, by the way, is one of the great stimulants anyway, because a person will hear a song and they'll immediately remember where they were when they first heard it or something that they were doing when they heard that song as well.
Absolutely. I love music. It sets an environment of learning. It really resonates with people, some neat music.
And, of course, then we can extend that learning into action once it's learned as well, and people can start to celebrate their success. I'd really like the example you gave earlier of the boy who thought of himself as a Jeopardy five-time champion every time he hit that buzzer. That really works well to reinforce these things so that they can be put into action.
Yeah, and you know what? Sometimes we think they're done with the class. They're done. That's often just the beginning. I mean, this extend learning to action with success stories, sending out podcasts, lunch and learns, doing e-freshers, you know, some kind of little virtual classroom presentation, having contests, you know, coaching, giving someone a coach to help them really act on all their best intentions is, I think, one of the secret weapons that people forget to use to really help ratchet up someone's success. And, you know, on meeting those business imperatives, let's get people fired up and sharing the success story. Look what I did when I implemented this.
I'm a great believer and supporter of concepts of lifelong learning, and I was navigating some baseball sites over the last while. It's one of my great things. I'm a big baseball fan. And I was reading about how a number of sports writers would look contemptuously upon some of the new statistics that better grade players. And so many of them would even point out how they really never even wanted to learn them, don't even bother them with these things. They don't care. And that really surprised and kind of upset me a little that someone would actually actively not want to learn something new.
Wow. Yeah, and you know what happens there over time, you know, if you don't want to learn anything new, I mean, it's obsolescence, right? You're obsolete. It's without innovation. I mean, just think how fast organizations are changing and growing. You know, and a new organization tomorrow could put you out of business because someone is learning and growing and changing.
Yes, the Steve Jobs model of wanting to learn constantly and forever is a much better model to follow, in my view.
Absolutely. I mean, it doesn't just create organizational success. It fires people up. I mean, you ask pretty much anyone, you know, do you love learning? I love learning. People, how do you feel about it? I love learning. I mean, people really have said that's the, you know, one of the, you know, number one reasons people stay with an organization is because of the quality of their learning, and they, you know, they absolutely enjoy being in a place where people care enough to teach them. And, you know, I it's very sad to hear baseball players saying that. I'll have to write them.
Yes, you'll have to, because there's clearly a need to continue learning. I was just thinking, you know, the last thing you'd want to do would be to go to a doctor who hadn't learned anything since he or she graduated from medical school, right?
Oh, unbelievable. Yeah. ASTD did a study, and they said of 11 factors that positively impact employee engagement, the quality of training and learning opportunities ranks number one. So, you know, learning, people really love to learn. So, yeah, I can't imagine going to a doctor that's not constantly upping his game and really learning the best practices.
Yes, I've always supported lifelong learning, and I'm always wanting to learn more things and learn something new and new skills and things that I hadn't learned in the past. It's never too late to learn them now, and so I continue.
And
my
look
mom
at you. Look what you're doing. You're constantly learning and helping other people learn from what you do.
My mom's in her 80s, and she's learning the guitar now. So.
Oh, neat.
So, you see, it's a family tradition here, you know.
That's great.
And what is next for Vicki Halsey?
Well, I think I'm continuing with my journey of helping people. You know, the book just came out in January, so I'm trying to create some podcasts, some little videos on the website that people can watch and really practice with and build a community of learners where people really, you know, and I like the intersection. I mean, if you think of a triangle and you think of success in life and success in organizations, and on the points of the triangle are teach, lead, and learn. I feel like I'm going to continue with my path of teaching, leading, and learning and helping other people do the same.
Teach, lead, and learn. I can see you put an E in there, and then it would be tell, or an A in there. It would be tall. Everything would be lots of ways to multiply it as well. I always think of these terms, you know, how can you add?
You do. Love that. Yeah, I don't have an acronym yet. I'm still at teach, lean, and lead and learn.
Well, don't worry. You'll come up with something. And how can we find you on the internet, Vicki?
Okay, so, and I, if anyone needs anything, feel free to just email me at Vicki, V-I-C-K-I, Halsey@kenblanchard.com. And then my website's www.vickihalsey, V-I-C-K-I-H-A-L-S-E-Y.com.
Well, thanks for taking the time to speak with us tonight, Vicki. It's been so much fun discussing this topic. the hour just flew by on us.
Oh, thank you. Well, thank you for inviting me, and I really appreciate this opportunity. And if that, who's ever listening, go out there and teach. Don't tell. Teach so people can be successful.
Well, you're very welcome. I enjoyed it very much. And thanks to everyone for tuning in to this edition of Blog Business Success here on Blog Talk Radio. And tonight our guest was Vicki Halsey, and she's Vice President of Applied Learning for the Ken Blanchard Companies. And she's also the author of the inspirational and revolutionary book, Brilliance by Design, Creating Learning Experiences That Connect, Inspire, and Engage. And Vicki Halsey described the importance and value of learning to people's lives and how people are energized when they learn something new. Thanks again, Vicki.
Thank you, Wayne. Have a great day.
You too. And thanks to everyone for tuning in. Good night.